taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
When the original states declared themselves independent, they made a couple of very bold statements. They said that we have unalienable rights, that they come from our Creator, that governments are created to protect those rights, and that they are there to serve the people. Now, over the decades and centuries, the role of government in America has changed, and it's changed drastically. Now, this came due to a couple of reasons, some for the desire for power, others for the fact that the people, well, their willingness to be ruled. It is claimed that Thomas Jefferson said, when the people fear government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. Well, ask yourself today, do you fear government or does government fear you? Now, this servitude to government does not come without a cost, but have you ever considered what that cost may be? See, we were all promised an idyllic future. All we have to do is let the experts in government make all the decisions for us. They will take care of us. They will provide for us. They know better how to deal with the poor, the needy, the old. They know better about education and about protecting your rights. They know all these things. Just let them do it and life will be wonderful, all sunshine and lollipops. Well, except that hasn't come true. Recent events should show us that the cost of servitude to government is not simply fear, but the cost may be quite great indeed. Hello there, everyday Americans. My name is Paul Engel. You've joined the Constitution Study. And today I want to delve deep into the question, what is the cost of the American people's subjugation and servitude to government? And sadly, much of this news is going to come out about Uvalde, Texas. Now, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that basically this is coming from, I guess it's the regional director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, that the shooter in Uvalde was outside the building for at least 12 minutes firing shots and was then allowed to enter the building completely unobstructed. You may say, well, that's terrible, Paul, but what does that have to do with servitude to government? Which, I don't know about you, but if there's someone hanging out on my property for 2 minutes firing shots, I'm doing something about it. I'm locking the doors, I'm grabbing my gun, and I'm investigating and probably calling the police. The students, the teachers, the administrative staff, the other staff were in the building for 12 minutes and nobody locked the doors? Or did they just miss a door? We don't know yet. But it seems to me that we see people waiting for the government to protect them. Now, if you are easily disturbed by events like this, you may want to turn off this program. Because one of the most heart-wrenching aspects that is coming to light about this shooting is just how dependent the people were. See, there are reports coming out of witnesses of the shooting begging the police to go in. That they were asking the police to go into the elementary school to save the people that were inside. To the point where even though the police would not go in right away, several of the bystanders actually considered going in themselves. A Javier Cesares, who's a father of one of the victims, said that he rushed to Robb Elementary School when he heard about the shooting, but police were still standing around outside when he arrived. He suggested to rush into the school himself with other bystanders, at least according to certain reports. He was willing to rush in because the police, the government officials, were not doing anything. At least he thought they should be doing something, and they wouldn't. And he was prepared to rush headlong into a dangerous situation. Now, Department of Public Safety says, no, the police did engage immediately. In fact, they said that the Border Patrol agents were on the scene, but they were having a hard time getting into the classroom. They had to wait for a staff member to open the door with a key. But DPS is saying, no, they did engage. They did contain Ramos. Yeah, okay. They contained him in a room, in a classroom. Now, again, I'm not there. I'm not a protections expert. They contained him. That's good. But can you feel for the father? Can you feel for Mr. Cazares, whose daughter was one of the victims killed? See, he was prepared to go in. And I wonder, when the officers that were outside, were they setting up a perimeter while others were inside? I don't know yet. There's still a lot of information coming out here. What does appear to be true is that this disturbed man was allowed to spend 12 minutes outside of school firing a gun, unchallenged, and was able to gain entry to that school after 12 minutes to spend an hour terrorizing, shooting, wounding, and killing before he was stopped. Now, there are many people, or at least some people, I've seen reports that are using the fact that the authorities contained the shooter in a classroom full of children. Again, I am not a protection expert. I'm not a security expert. But I understand the logic of first you prevent the problem from spreading, then you try to find the best outcome. Once he was contained in that room, what is the best outcome? Do you storm in? And understanding that if you storm in, he is more likely to start shooting, and that may involve shooting some of the children in the classroom. Do you attempt to talk him down? Do you attempt to delay? Do you attempt other things as well? I'm not this idea that law enforcement contained him in the classroom, to me, is not automatically a failure of law enforcement. I do see the logic of saying, now that he's contained, he's not going to other places. He's not going anywhere. We want to find an outcome that is best for the children that are there. So I'm not simply throwing law enforcement under the bus, as I've seen other people do. This is simply an understanding of, again, parents whose children are in that room and feeling helpless waiting for law enforcement. So we have the benefit of 2020 hindsight, the ability to make calm, logical, rational decisions. So I want to look at this a couple of ways. So on the one hand, you have parents that are entrusting their children in a government-run school that includes the children's safety. Now, they're required by law to make sure the children are educated. At least I'm pretty sure. All 50 states require that children go to school. And of course, since government taxes the people to provide for the school, 90% of people send their children to public schools, government-run schools, mostly probably because they couldn't afford another option. So there they are, dependent on government. And government made a mistake. Somebody in that school, some group of somebody's made mistakes. Now, there wasn't one single mistake that led to this. There were lots of mistakes. You have a disturbed young man, a man who shot his grandmother in the face and then decided to go to an elementary school to start killing people. Was there evidence beforehand? That's what it sounds like. But again, we have the benefit of 2020 hindsight. We have the benefit of knowing the outcome of his mental state. And it is unfair to take someone beforehand and say, well, you know, A, B, and C should have led you to understand this guy was dangerous, when they may have seen A, B, and C a dozen times, 100 times. It never led to something like this. We want to be fair. At least I want to be fair. But if it's true, if he was outside this school for 12 minutes firing arms, sending off rounds, and the doors were still open, security was not there. I understand there's supposed to be armed security. There were reports that armed security was on site, but 12 minutes. Did it take that long for the police to show up? Possibly. I'm not familiar with Uvalde, Texas. I'm not familiar with where I live. 10, 12 minutes for law enforcement to show up is not unreasonable. I live in a rural area. But again, if you're dependent on someone else to come show up and save you, if it takes 12 minutes, that can be a very long 12 minutes. And again, this is not simply to point blame. The people who failed to secure the building must live with that the rest of their lives. But it's this idea of dependence, that they were dependent on somebody with a government paycheck to lock those doors, somebody with a government paycheck to show up and help protect them. And the fact that it appears that it was Border Patrol that was the ones that had the shooter, the criminal, the murderer contained, rather than local law enforcement, does that make you, if you live in Uvalde, Texas, does that make you more or less comfortable? This is all what led up to this is the beginning of this event. Remember, this guy was shooting for something like 60 minutes. And the dependency that allowed this to happen. See, it's not simply that somebody forgot to lock the door. That it took 12 minutes for law enforcement to show up. I'm assuming it took 12 minutes for them to show up. Why else would he head indoors? Maybe they were longer. I haven't seen those reports yet. But these are all situations where the people in the school were either unaware of what was going on, unprepared for what was going on, or were so conditioned to wait for someone to come save them that they didn't do what they could have done with just a little bit of training and a little bit of forethought. And that's the part that scares me. That whether via apathy or just an unwillingness to consider the evil that may happen, the people weren't prepared. That neither the government officials were apparently completely prepared, nor at least the ones in the school, nor were the parents prepared for the possibility which is not unheard of in this day and age, of a crazed gunman trying to kill. Now, I have to head to a break, but before I do, please head to my website, constitutionstudy.com. That's where you'll find everything that I'm working on. You can sign up for my newsletter. You can ask a question, which I'll be more than happy to answer on the radio if you would like. You can join our online Constitution study. You can join us on the Constitution Scholars and become a scholar yourself. These are all available. These are all ways to help educate yourself. To help us understand, we need to prepare our minds for where we want our bodies to go. Now, speaking of preparing your minds and preparing your body, you know, one of the things we need to do is it's up to us to keep ourselves healthy. We can't be dependent on government to do that. Now, in this day and age, that means eating right, but it also means taking supplements. Supplements that are useful to your body. Now, Healthy Cell is a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for health at the cellular level. You may not realize that the most vitamins on the shelf have not been upgraded since the 1930s, but Healthy Cell has reinvented them. One of these is called the Immune Super Boost. It's designed as a simple immune-boosting gel pack. It combines over a dozen immune supplements in one pack that you can either take directly or mix in liquid. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, Healthy Cell will give you 20% off your first order. All they ask you to do is use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So go to HealthyCell.com, put together whatever you want in your order. Please use that code OUTLOUD. It tells Healthy Cell that you listen to America Out Loud, and Healthy Cell will give you a 20% discount on your first order.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Surely, if you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're looking at the cost of our servitude. Now, there are lots of costs, as I said before, that span our lives. But recent events, especially those in Texas, well, they've truly pointed out the cost of our servitude. We looked at the first segment at the cost of being dependent on government to protect our children. To expect government to find people who will act badly and stop them before they actually harm us or our children. And it's just not going to work. But what happened next, to me, is a perfect example of the servitude of the American people. Not maybe necessarily in their hearts, but certainly in their minds. Now, I want to set the stage. A gunman was outside of a elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. Reports say for 12 minutes before entering through what was still yet an unlocked back door. At this point, the gunman apparently went into a classroom and barricaded himself in. Now, at this point, police are in a difficult situation, and I want to give them the benefit of doubt, and I'll explain more a little later in this segment. But during this time, parents are showing up. Take, for example, an Angeli Rose Gomez, who showed up to the school after hearing about the shooting, and what she saw was police doing nothing. Now, I mentioned in the first segment, if the man is barricaded in a classroom, there's a conflicting situation, right? Because if the police storm the classroom, well, the shooter can start shooting and more innocents can die. I don't know at the time frame for the 19 that were shot and killed, the 19 children and two teachers who were shot and killed. Children and two teachers. I don't know the time frame. And so I don't know if the 19 were already shot or if they were shot after the police showed up. I don't know this yet. There's still a lot of information coming out. But here's a mother. Her daughter's in that school. She shows up and she's a police doing nothing. They're just standing. They weren't going anywhere. And of course, to her mind, all she wants is to save her daughter. So she starts yelling and demanding that the officers stop waiting around, go into the school. Well, it was that point that federal marshals arrested her. Yet she was being arrested for intervening in an active investigation. Tell me, what law, what constitutional authority do the federal marshals have in this situation? The answer is absolutely none. So first of all, I want these officers reprimanded for false arrest. They have no jurisdiction. This is not a federal issue. I don't care that they want to call it terrorism. Take a look at the Constitution. Terrorism is not a power delegated to the United States. So the fact that U.S. Marshals, now U.S. Marshals coming to assist, I have no problem. But they're arresting someone for what is not a federal crime. Furthermore, how can it be a federal crime for this mother to petition the government for redress of grievance? You see, she's asking the police officer, she's demanding that they do something. Now, yes, there are children in that classroom. Apparently, there were children outside the classroom as well. But she wasn't alone. She was she was able to get local law enforcement to convince the marshals to let her go. But she also saw Father pepper sprayed, tackled, and handcuffed as he tried to go into the school. Yeah, the school where his 10-year-old daughter was massacred. Now, once Gomez was let go by the marshals, guess what she did? She booked it to the school. She jumped a fence. She ran inside. She rescued her daughter and then sprinted out of the school with her children, at least according to the Wall Street Journal. See, this was a parent that was willing to risk their life to save their child. And here you have government actors getting in the way. Now, again, I'm not talking about them, whether or not they stormed the classroom. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the rest of the children that are still in harm's way, if not under direct threat. Why were they not evacuated? If they had the gunman contained, as they claimed, why was not law enforcement clearing out the rest of the students, like this mother did? But you see, you're back to the question of they're expecting government to protect their children. And as several parents tried to protect their children by themselves, again, they were arrested, tackled, pepper sprayed, handcuffed for attempting to retrieve their children from the scene of a mass shooting. What's wrong with this picture? The picture of law enforcement. Okay, if you have him contained, why are you not evacuating the rest of the school? Why are you preventing parents from rescuing their children? Why is it a crime for a mother to go to the rescue of her own children? Because it got in the way of some bureaucratic process? Now again, I want to be fair. I want to see this from both sides. I think we owe it not only to the officers, but to ourselves. Now, I saw a report from a former SWAT commander, Special Weapons and Tactics, and I think he holds up a lot of what I said, right? So he said that officers are trained not to wait for tactical teams, but to they're trained to disable the gunman as quickly as possible, even if there's only two officers on the scene. But if gunfire stops, law enforcement are trained to react as if this is a hostage situation, and different tactics are involved. You wait, according to this commander. So I'm trying not to throw anybody under the bus. If gunfire is happening, the law enforcement should be trained to stop the threat as quickly as possible, even if it's just, you know, two guys and a gun. But if he was barricaded in a room and was not in the process of shooting people, well, then the tactic is to wait. Again, in my mind, for the very simple reason of, if he's not currently shooting people, you storm in, he's going to start shooting people. But what I found interesting in this in one of the reports, this one coming from the Daily Caller, that the law enforcement, the government response was so long in happening that onlookers discussed entering the premises themselves. Now again, this delayed response has happened before, right? Parkland, 2018, where the officers stood by and waited. But here we're talking about the time it actually took law enforcement to show up. The response, I shouldn't say show up, the response was so delayed. I guess my question is, what was that discussion? Was the discussion, should we do it ourselves or should we wait for the government actors? Or was the discussion, will we cause more damage if we go in now? If we don't wait for the police, will we cause more harm than good? Those are two different discussions. See, one discussion is looking at the situation tactically and saying, if we do this, what could happen? Could we instigate even more gunfire, even more wounding and death? That is a good discussion to have. If the discussion is, well, we should wait for the police because it's their job, that's not the discussion of a free people. That's the discussion of subjects, servants, slaves, waiting for their masters, their overseers to tell them what to do. Again, it's a very dynamic situation. I'm not trying to cast blame. I'm trying to use this 2020 hindsight for us to think about this for the future. You see, one of the things in training is this idea of your body doesn't go where your mind has not already been. If you haven't stopped and thought, what would I do in a situation like this? You're caught off guard. You've often heard of the fight or flight reaction. Well, there's actually three. It's not simply fight or flight. It's fight, flight, or freeze. And if you've never thought about this beforehand, you tend to freeze. You don't know what to do. You haven't thought about what you're doing. I drove my daughter crazy when she was a teenager. Because we'd go out somewhere. We'd go out to dinner or out to lunch or out to something. And I'd randomly ask her, where are the exits? If something terrible would happen, where would you look to go? Interestingly, she always forgot the kitchen. So, okay, you're sitting here, and let's say somebody starts having an argument there with the hostess, and it gets loud, and you're getting concerned. And she always looked at the doors, but she always forgot to go out through the kitchen. But you see, you have to take time to think, okay, where are my possible exits? Where do I go if something bad happens? Where are my points of egress? At what point do I consider getting up and leaving? You want to do that beforehand. Again, I'm no protection expert. I'm not a self-defense expert. I've taken some classes. I've gotten a little bit of training. But I've taken the time to think, in this situation, what would I do? And you know what the one thing I can honestly say I've never thought was an appropriate response to an imminent threat? To hide and wait for law enforcement. If I'm hiding and waiting, it's because there's been some failure, generally on my part. It's one of the reasons why there are certain places I hate going, because I know if I go in there, my only response to a bad situation is to hide and wait. But it's that mentality of, I don't have to prepare for this because that's what we have police for. I don't need to defend myself because that's what we have police for. I don't need a gun or self-defense tools or training or observational skills because that's what we have a police force for. Well, that means you're dependent on others for your own safety. Now, I'm not talking about the myths of the Wild West where, you know, shootouts in the streets all the time. No. I'm talking about determining for yourself what level of preparation are you comfortable with. It doesn't have to be walking around like Wyatt Earp with a six shooter on your hip. It could be as simple as, I'm going to pay more attention to exits. I'm going to consider what my exit strategy, my egress strategies are. I'm going to consider, if something happens at my child's school, what will I do? How will I enter? How will I retrieve them? Will I retrieve them? It's that thinking for yourself beforehand. See, the cost of servitude isn't simply having to wait for government to act. It's the mindset of, I can't act until government does. I have to wait. I have to wait for law enforcement to show up. I have to wait for government to approve this. That leaves you flat-footed, unprepared, in a situation that may truly be life or death. Now, thank God these types of incidents are extremely rare. I know we're told that there's an epidemic, they're happening all the time. That's not true. They are rare. They're happening a bit more frequently, but they're still quite rare. But the cost of not preparing is so high, I believe it outweighs the rarity of the situation. It's like when I get on an airplane. The chances of that airplane actually crashing are extremely low. Otherwise, I wouldn't get on the airplane. But that doesn't mean when I'm in the airplane, I'm not making sure, here are the exits, where are the exit rows, how far, which direction. I haven't prepared myself for what if. See, that's the difference between someone who's responsible for their own safety and someone who's being dependent on someone else to provide their safety for them. If you're a servant, if you're a subject, you're waiting for someone else to provide your safety for you. If you want to be a free citizen, the first responsibility for your safety rests on your shoulders. And the safety of your family rests on your shoulders. And then government, law enforcement, other services are there to back you up. In other words, governments are not instituted among men to protect us. According to the Declaration of Independence, governments are instituted among men to protect our rights, including the right to defend ourselves, to care for ourselves, to provide for ourselves in a manner that we seem fit. The cost of servitude isn't simply monetary. It isn't simply liberty. It isn't even necessarily life or death. It's the attitude of dependence on others that leads to so much else of what we look at this world and say is, at least in my mind, so wrong with America. It's the mindset that I must be dependent on someone else to provide for me, to provide me income, to provide for my safety, to provide for my food, to provide for my medical care. That is the cost of servitude. Now, I have to take another break. Before I do, I want to remind everyone that you can listen to the Constitution Study live 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio network. You can listen on our media player or on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find all the links on AmericaOutLoud.com. Also find the podcast on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart Podcast, basically anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And do me a favor, share those links. Share them with friends, family, and social media so that other people can find America Out Loud as well.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. If you're joining the Constitution Study, we're talking today about the cost of servitude. Now, part of the cost of servitude, I believe, is a politicization of just about everything. Take, for example, look at the reaction to we've been talking about Uvalde, Texas, but look at the similar situation in Buffalo, New York. See, media was all over that because it was apparently a white, they found a white supremacist. They apparently had been looking hard for one. They found a white supremacist, and it was in the media, and President Biden visited the city. Whole big deal. But you know what's interesting? When was the last time you heard about Waukesha, Wisconsin? See, it wasn't in the news at that level. The Biden didn't make, I don't think Biden made a visit there. And there's a couple reasons for this. Reason number one, see, it wasn't a white guy that committed the crime. It was a black separatist. Second, he didn't use a gun. He used a car. He plowed his car into a parade of elderly women. That didn't get the outrage. It was in the news for a few days, but then it was gone. There weren't calls for car control and common sense car control regulation. No. There wasn't talk about the need to deal with black separatists. No. See, this is what I find truly disgusting about these events. The people who commit them are generally, they've got a problem. There are mental issues there. But it's how the rest of the world deals with them. How the politicians deal with them. How the news media deals with them. Politicizing the death of people in order to promote an agenda. You say, what does that have to do with the cost of servitude? Well, if you're sitting there and you're waiting for someone to tell you when something is really bad or not, that's the level of information. So you're familiar with the Uvalde shooting and the Buffalo shooting, but you don't hear so much about the Waukesha mass attack because you're dependent on others to tell you what is true. And so when people come and say, we must, you know, forget the laws, forget the Constitution, we must, you know, do this thing or make this common sense, it makes sense because the only information you have is what's been served to you on a silver platter. You know, it takes a little bit of extra time to do some research on your own, to find multiple sources of news and weed through them, to stop and consider what's going on, as I've tried to do here. To set aside my initial reaction to some of these stories and look at the whole picture. Try to get the entire picture. But if you are a servant of the news media when it comes to mass killings, you have a view that doesn't match reality. And that can be used to manipulate you into giving up more of your rights, more of your ability to protect yourself, because government will do it for you. All it will cost you is 12 easy payments of every liberty you've ever had. Now, speaking of politicizing, you know my opinion. If you've listened to me for any length of time, when it comes to the political parties, a pox on both their houses. I want nothing to do with the Democrats or the Republicans. So when I saw this story, this one came in the Epoch Times, that Senate Republicans blocked a domestic terror bill. Now, H.R. 350, which is dubbed the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act of 2022, would authorize a bunch of domestic terrorism offices and departments and units throughout the Departments of Homeland Security, Justice, the FBI. Now, the Republicans claimed that this was, they were trying to create a thought police. Of course, it was the Democrats. The Republicans are saying the Democrats are trying to create thought police. Okay. But you see, just a couple days later, in the Senate, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, blocked legislation that some say could help prevent school shootings. See, the legislation known as the Luke and Alex School Safety Act would have required Department of Homeland Security to establish a clearinghouse on the best school safety practices after they consulted with experts. So, of course, the Democrats couldn't push that through. Now, I want to point something out about both these pieces of legislation. So hang with me just a minute. So the Domestic Terrorism Prevention Act was meant to create departments in these different agencies to analyze and monitor domestic terror activity. Okay, I don't want to see it defined, but where in the Constitution is the federal government authorized to oversee domestic terrorism? It's domestic. It's not foreign affairs. We're not dealing with foreign terrorists. We're dealing with domestic terrorism. Tell me, where is the United States authorized to do that? And when they're talking about analyze and monitor, why can't they do that now? Why does it take a new unit with more money and more spending to analyze and monitor domestic terrorist activities? You see, the other part of this is H.R. 350 also required the federal government to take steps to prevent domestic terror. Excuse me, federal government is not involved with domestic law enforcement. Since it's not a power delegated to the United States, this is illegal. But notice, at least as far as I've seen, this Democratically backed bill, was opposed by the Republicans not because of, domestic terrorism is not a power delegated to the United States. No. Domestic law enforcement is not a power delegated to the United States. No, that wasn't it. They simply said, well, it was thought police. It was another, they thought it would be something more along the lines of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which has been used to spy on the American people. Again, I'm like, okay, if you're really worried about spying on the American people, what are you doing about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act? What are you doing about existing spying on the American people? Because you gotta remember, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and the Patriot Act, I do believe they were both passed by Republican-led houses of Congress and signed by a Republican president. But the Republicans have this idea, hey, I know what we'll do. We will create a federal clearinghouse for all this data. There's a problem. It is not authorized by the Constitution. Education is not authorized by the Constitution. School safety is not a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution. These are state powers. Now, if the states want to get together and establish a clearinghouse of best practices, there's nothing to stop them. There's, you know, unless they're talking about entering into some interstate agreement about how they're going to share this information, that would have to be ratified by Congress, but is not a power of the federal government to become the clearinghouse for safety data. See? Both sides are looking to infringe on your rights. They're looking to take control, move power into the federal government. They're just doing it two different ways. And it appears the main opposition they have is, well, we can't let the other side win. The Democrats oppose a Republican plan. The Republicans oppose a Democratic plan. Now, before I go, I want to put this whole program, I should say the whole Texas shooting incident, into a little bit of perspective. You see, the FBI released a report on active shooter incidents in the United States in 2021. That's what we're talking about. They call it active shooter. I don't necessarily agree with that term, but that's the term that people use. When I go to the gun range, I'm an active shooter. I'm just not using it to kill people. And of course, we're all talking about more law enforcement, more bureaucracy, more control. Okay. Let's look at some of the numbers. Again, this is data collected by the FBI. In 2020, there were 40 instances of what they refer to as an active shooter. Now, let me find, they defined an active shooter as shooting in a public place, shootings occurring at more than one location, shootings where the shooter's actions were not the result of another criminal act, shootings resulting in mass killing, shootings indicating apparent spontaneity by the shooter, shootings where the shooter appeared to methodically search for potential victims, and shootings that appeared focused on injury to people, not buildings or objects. Right? So that's what they refer to when we're talking about. In 2020, there were 40. In 2021, there were 61. The numbers are going up. Now, there's a couple interesting things I want you to notice here. As I went through this list, there are three numbers I want you to consider. In 2020, 7 of the shooters committed suicide. In 2021, 11 shooters committed suicide. In 2020, 4 of the shooters were killed by law enforcement. In 2021, 14 of the killers were killed by law enforcement. In 2020, 24 of the shooters were apprehended by law enforcement. 30 in 2021. But don't forget this number. In 2020, 2 of the shooters were killed by citizens. In 2021, 4 of them were. See, the thing we keep talking about is how, or so much of the world seems to be focused on the gun. How do we stop the gun? How do we stop the gun? We forget that guns are also used to save lives. Now, in 2021, there are 2 instances where the citizens engaged the shooter, and in one incident, 7 employees exchanged multiple volleys of gunfire with the shooter, 4 of them during the final encounter, resulting in the death of the shooter. In other words, in one incident in 2021, 7 employees where the act took place returned fire and eventually killed the shooter. Now, yes, 2 people were killed, 1 customer, 1 employee, and 2 employees were wounded. But the shooting was stopped. The shooter was no longer looking for people to go after. They could focus on the people that were trying to kill him. And he was stopped. But it's not just people who were killed. You see, in 2021, there was one instance where 2 citizens confronted and tackled the shooter until law enforcement arrived. In one incident, a teacher disarmed and detained the shooter, who was a student, until law enforcement arrived. In another incident, an armed citizen shot and killed the gunman, who had just ambushed a law enforcement officer. And in one incident, an armed employee shot and killed the shooter. By the way, that employee was then lost his job. The shooter, who was an employee, just lost his job earlier that day. A disgruntled employee. See, in several of these instances, it wasn't the story wasn't simply the gunman who was using his arms to kill people, his right to keep and bear arms to kill people. It was people using their right to keep and bear arms to save people. And notice, not all of these incidents, 2 of them involved firearms, 2 apparently not. But they all involve people who are not waiting around for a government official, someone with a badge, someone with a government paycheck, to come save them. So if we go back to the numbers and say, well, gee, Paul, you know, out of the 61 total incidents, only 4 of them was a shooter shot and was a shooter killed by the citizen. What if you were in one of those 4 incidents? I don't necessarily mean the person that shot and killed the citizen. I mean the one that you were there. You could have been a victim, but somebody shot and killed the shooter. What if they weren't shot? What if you were in one of those 6 instances where they detained, where they engaged the shooter, maybe killing them, maybe holding them until law enforcement showed up? See, if the cost of not being prepared is so great that you may lose your life, then I have here 4 instances. Actually, I have 6 instances, but 4 that involve killing.
where a citizen saved the lives of others. Wouldn't we want more of that? Or are you happier when it's law enforcement that does the killing for you? When it's law enforcement that saved your life? See, personally, I am not a slave. I am not a servant of government. I'm not the one waiting around for government to come in and save me. I will do my best to protect myself, to protect my family, and then work with law enforcement to clean up in the aftermath. I pray I am never put to that test. And I pray you are never put to that test either. I'm not looking for the next shootout at the OK Corral. But I want you to think, what is the long-term cost of being a subject of government, of serving government, of being able to defend yourself at the government's deference? Because the cost is not simply your choice of underarm deodorant, to flash back to Bernie Sanders. It's actually the choice of whether or not you will get to defend yourself. You know, the Second Amendment says that a well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free state. Now, whether you decide to be armed or not, to be part of a militia or not, are you prepared to defend yourself? And are you prepared to share and spread the blessings of liberty to yourself, to your posterity, and to your neighbors?
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.